I thought she would have come in with you.
I don't want to do, but I didn't want to wake up early.
See? They're going again.
what we will finally put out there, because this is dependent, the success of all that we wanted to do will be dependent on the goodwill also that we're able to establish. We have worked very closely with both HEPCOM and TM in the development and in the processes, and as I'm saying, the final document should be approved and published fairly soon. We try to keep it somewhat open-ended so that in some parts, so that on implementation, if there's need to improve and tighten, we're able to do all of that. What we have also done is that because of the strong support for the key elements of the framework, which were signaled in the submissions that we received, we have then been able to move on some of those elements where there was no controversy so that we begin implementation and not delay the process. And we have moved ahead on these issues in partnership with our provincial colleagues, with higher education institutions, as well as the state. Some of the elements that we have made significant progress around are firstly the recruitment campaign, which I've said is signaled very strongly in the document in the initial preparation of teachers. We have mounted or beginning to mount the recruitment campaign linked to the bursary, to a bursary program. The committee will know that in October last year, the Minister of Finance announced an allocation for this area to the tune of 700 million over 3 years. What we have decided to do is to term that bursary campaign the Fundado Saga bursary program. Fundado Saga is a Tshivenda name meaning educate the nation. And that's the banner under which we're launching our recruitment campaign. What we're doing in there is to promote teaching as a career of first choice for able, committed South Africans, you know, both young and mature. So we're not looking only at initial entrance, so we're not targeting only on matriculants or those people. What we're putting out there is what's worth, because we don't want to recruit people into the profession under false pretenses. So what we're saying is that it is a challenging profession. You go into it just because you want to serve, but also you will find fulfillment in choosing the profession. The people that we're targeting, top high school learners who are seeking a challenging and socially valuable career. We're looking at higher education students, so students who are already at higher education doing a basic degree, but who are looking at something meaningful to do with their qualifications. Thirdly, we're looking at mature citizens who want to switch to a more fulfilling career. And lastly, we're looking at former teachers who might want to return and come back into the profession. And in the recruitment, we're looking at some of the things that we want to lift so that people can realize that, in fact, this is a profession that is worth choosing. Firstly, we're looking at it as a challenging profession that demands exceptional intellectual and moral commitment from exceptional people. And those are the things that we're lifting, because traditionally, teaching has been seen as for those who are less able, if you can't do anything else. They say those who can't teach, I can't remember what they say exactly. But we're saying it is challenging, and therefore it needs special people. It is fulfilling, and that's why you may want to choose it. It has high social esteem, because teaching is the backbone of social transformation. And you want to put all of those things back to the center. We also want, through the campaign, working with people in the profession to dispel the notion that, in fact, if you become a teacher, you're going to be poor for life. Because we do think that, firstly, there are lots of things that we can use to sell the profession. It has job security. it's, you know, and we can look at what has been done since 1994 to improve teachers' pay and their career prospects, because a lot has been done. We're saying that for poor students, because I'm trying to distinguish here, that's like the best campaign target more your bright students, well, bright students pay priority early. But we have another route to funding students through the NASFA, which really looks primarily at students who cannot afford to pay for themselves. So we've got those two, especially your NASFA, so you can get into teaching through that route, or you can get a Fulgarushaga bursary, which comes with a guarantee for employment. And that, so I think that makes it very attractive. This program, as I said, was launched as a result of the allocation that was made to in October last year. And we began in earnest to launch it out there in December 2006. We had a very successful, I'd say, but limited advertising campaign. That was because for the year that we're in, the 2007 academic year, we had a total of 120 million rand in batteries. And therefore, we did not want to do a major campaign and not be able to accommodate all of those students who applied. So we, and that 120 million, we're expecting should cover about 3,000, amount to three, translating to 3,000 full cost bursaries, which are linked to Senate conference. There's been an excellent response to that campaign. To date, we've received over 4,000 applications already, and we're saying we have approximately 3,000 bursaries that we can allocate. And although in most institutions the closing date for the bursaries for the allocation is the 28th of April, the indications already are that the fund, all the funds that we've allocated will be fully utilized. We have worked very closely on this with all the higher education institutions, vice chancellors, registrars, and registrars and the deans. We have worked very closely with the NSFAS management, because they, you know, they've gone through a similar route before, and they've been extremely helpful. And we have now developed an implementation protocol which the provincial department signed yesterday, which unpacks the roles and responsibilities for the national department and for the provincial department, as well as for NSFAS in the implementation of the Bursary program. In 2007, we have sent out exactly who we're targeting. I said we're targeting these kinds of learners, but in which programs? Be it students in all of their, in whatever year they are. So not just your first time entrance, but throughout the degree. We're looking at students in those junior degrees with majors that are suitable for admission to a postgraduate certificate in education, which students might commit to after graduating, and we're looking at PGCE students. But we're looking at all of those students only in designated areas of study, areas that we have identified as priority areas. These priority areas for 2007 are the ones that I've outlined today. There are some that really are only in grade R to 9, but we look also at the needs of the curriculum at SEC level and what, you know, are the priority areas in this. What I would like to lift today is the importance that is given to language, your African languages, and of course English, because it is the dominant language of learning and teaching. And again, foundation phase I want to lift, because we don't have a sufficient core of trained foundation phase teachers, so we prioritize that as well. Just to say, we will review the priority areas, you know, as we progress with the program. Another thing that I'd like to lift is that those students who default will then have to convert this and get into a loan, and they have to pay us back our money, according to NSFAS rules. in terms of selection for bursaries, it's not everybody who applies who gets the bursary. I think I've hinted at this already before. The high-tech institutions apply the academic criteria, and they work, however, with provincial departments of education to select people that who jointly feel applicable to enter the profession, and we can hold up and get as role model. A brief picture of the allocations in the MTF. We're expecting another 180 million for the 2008-2009 financial year, which should translate into about 4,500 bursaries, and 400 million for 2009, you know, we're looking at an additional 9,000 bursaries. If you look at that, and the fact that we're not funded, we're taking students at different points. Some of them are competing already this year, some are in their third year. We're expecting that this should lead to a massive national input into teaching, but it's a major commitment from government, and it emphasizes and highlights the importance that government places on it. If I have then to move from there to the area of continuing professional teacher development, we have started working very intensely, DOE and SAFE, to plan and develop the national program around this. It is going to be a massive program, and we're estimating that for it to be fully up and running, it will take us between 18 to 24 months. But we're saying we're not waiting until then. A phased implementation is necessary, and we will work on that. And in the meantime, priority incentive programs will continue. So your national professional development in education for upgrading unqualified and underqualified teachers, as well as the ACE offerings, which target a whole range of needs in the system, those will continue. What envisioned from the quality framework is that the CPDD program would be aimed at supporting teachers' own assessment of their needs through the ICMS process, that it will address defined weaknesses that we're finding in the system, and that we will use experience and expertise in the system as much as possible. So the whole area of teacher mentors, master trainers in the system, those are areas that we will be using much more, and we seek to promote school-based activities as much as possible so that we don't take teachers away from the school to train them elsewhere. And the whole program is premised on develop and improve quality on within the system and not situated at all. What we are doing already is to look at ways to empower states to manage the program, because that's their statutory mandate. And we will work with them to ensure that states is able to do the things that they need to do. And all states and got professional development activities will end the professional development points that have gone through. We are hoping that, we have signaled that we expect teachers to accumulate a target number of points each 3 year cycle. And that's what there was the ferrari around. Go for re-registration or what we are doing is to look at all of those things and looking at factors that may both success and risk factors. There's a task team that's working on that already, because what we want to ensure is that when we embark on the program, when we launch it out there, we can be sure of its success. We will try, by all means, to avoid, serious risks that are being signaled already. And any risk that you think we can manage, we will manage as we implement. Because we're saying a successful CPDD program, firstly, will require that teachers have confidence in what we're doing and support in the route that we're taking. And we want to be sure that the TD point system is a point system that will serve the real professional needs of teachers. So we don't want people to accumulate teaching points that in the end may not serve the profession itself. We are seeking, even as we begin with the conceptualization, to ensure that we build in serious quality control and assurance. And that we are assured in whatever we're putting into place that there will be strong support at provincial level, at district level, and that the school leadership, the principals, are also able to provide the leadership that is necessary. And of course, the question of accurate database is critical and at the same core of a successful CPD program as we are proposing. We had signaled also in the draft framework that we published the need for a stakeholder advisory body. We're keeping that and review. At the moment, we're doing some of the elements that need to be done. We may, in the subcommittees that we established, particularly under the CPD program, bring in, you know, we will in fact bring in a lot of stakeholders to be part of the work that needs to be done. And just to say, the parliamentary process and the oversight that's provided by the portfolio committee is highly appreciated, and we're hoping that you continue it. We really appreciate it. What the DOE will do in the meantime, which is a slide that I actually moved to before I talked about our appreciation for the oversight role that you play, is to say the DOE is already in the process of allocating 5 million rand to say for the initial work that is starting now. Other grants will follow as development plans are approved. And in fact, tomorrow afternoon, as a submission from say that the joint DOE data team is looking at what work needs to be done and what the funding that is needed to be. And also just to say lastly that we believe that CPD is an investment in education quality. And therefore, what the program must do, it must not bring huge administrative work, but it must really produce more effective training in our schools. Thank you very much.
My wife has been teaching mathematics for over 20 years, and she teaches with a passion. So much so that in my home, all the time, there are these learners from all schools, the KGT. She crossed over, became a subject advisor, assisting all schools around. But because of the healing, she is now a general dealer. She had to move to the ETO. Which now is basically dealing with policies, facts, and materials. That is one teacher that has a lot to do. Why? Because I don't know how this career process is implemented. How? I'm just using that as a practical example of one mathematics teacher who not doing anything in mathematical now, though she loves it with a passion. I'm just adding that in the context. I don't know how many teachers we lose in that way. Why we have a policy to say, if you are a teacher, keep on teaching, but be able to rise and as far as salaries, fulfillment, and what have you, be like anybody. I don't know if I can comment on that before.
stop there. Let me take responsibility for it. Certainly the career passing is an agreement with the unions and is therefore in place, certainly. But I think we would recognize that career passing is essentially within the school context. What we've said is a teacher can progress up to the level of deputy principal, even level of principal within the school context. But ultimately, any step up out of the school into the district level, whether it's the subject advisory services or other, will be a promotion beyond the level of either teacher or principal. So, Chair, the career passing option certainly wouldn't compete with those sort of levels of pay. We're not going to pay a math teacher the same as a subject advisor. It does produce tensions. We had a CM meeting yesterday where the POPO MEC indicated that they have advertised 400 subject advisory posts, and given the performance in the matric, I think it's a very important intervention. But the MEC was in a way crying because he said, you know, the reality is that these 400 ultimately are going to be my best teachers. Now, it's the tension we face. You have a good teacher. Do you keep them locked up in one school, obviously doing a good job in serving those learners, or do you lift them up to a level where they are then out of the classroom, but hopefully are bringing an influence on many, many more teachers and hopefully making them better teachers in turn? So just lifting perhaps that level of influence. But he was most concerned, obviously, that he was taking some of the best teachers out of the classroom. So, I think we always face that difficulty. But as I say, I don't think we can expect that the career passing option would allow that ordinary classroom teacher, as it were, to be progressing up to the levels that you're talking about of subject advisory services, etc. So, regrettable, but as I say, I can only hope that people like your wife are now extending their influence to many, many other teachers that will still be assuring that in some way she is assisting in better math outcomes. The best I can give at this stage. With regard to that, I'd like to know, is there a target date or something like that by when all teachers without the necessary qualification, without the necessary training and so on, must be up to the required level, must be brought up to that level? Because there must be some other cut-off point, I would think, not cut-off point, but a point, at least a target from the department side, to say by then, we're going to have everybody up to the required standard. And then, with regard to the point system that you're introducing, my question is very simple, and that is, what if teachers do not accumulate the number of points required? What would then happen, or would nothing happen? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Essentially, one will express a
far as provision of quality education is concerned. Chair, I've got a few issues of concern here and questions. Firstly, I share your concerns regarding career path. It seems it's just a concept. But when you look at the content and as well as how it's being implemented, there isn't much. And I think there's a huge frustration. I can understand the complexity around it, but I think we need to think more deeply about it because really it's quite frustrating. I can quote one district. In Limpopo, when we visited last year, that district is the best district as far as the results and the services are concerned. But one problematic area, you find good teachers of math, so on and so on. And then they will simply move away because there's no incentive. You see, we talk about this material incentive, but if you look down, you know, certain much and it becomes a huge frustration. So we hope that perhaps we have to think more seriously about it. Now, the second concern that I'm having is around quality assurance. In your presentation, you mentioned the issue of the serious quality control and assurance. I've got a practical experience. I won't mention the province and the teacher and the university concerned that offers BED, which started last year. I'm sure about 26 or 28 teachers. You know, that course has not been properly designed. For the whole year, only one assignment, which was not even given to as a feedback issue. The methodology of tuition is not clear, whether it is contact, which is very limited, and then students are being called just few days before examination for further contact for the whole year. A material, prescription, now books, you know, a digital exchange. The whole course is completely inadequately designed. And I've looked at whether all of them have passed and are going for the second year now. It is not quite clear, you know, with registration, you know, even communication. It's horribly and unprofessional. And now they're busy with the research. And I was interacting with them, you know, how you could just see that here is simple fiscal dumping to increase numbers. We've trained so many numbers of teachers and they want to qualify. I think there is a need to look very closely about this question of quality control. Because if I just go to have, you know, quantity, we've trained 28 teachers in the end when the content actually is. There is a lot of questions. I don't think we hope to increase the quality of education. So there are concerns about some of these teachers, institutions and provinces who simply want to increase numbers without quality accompanying it. This is one key case we can discuss outside. And another area is the question of own assessment. Professional, continuous professional development is very key. Because teaching is a very complex and it's very dynamic, you know, environment. And that actually calls for self, you know. But you talk of professional, actually, it's about somebody who's self. Now, the department came up with this instrument, IQMS. There has been concern around this conceptualization, where you've got a single instrument which simultaneously hope, you know, to achieve both accountability and professional development. And experience so far is that emphasis is on accountability, just to get, you know, the 1%. At the expense of professional development, the instrument is intended for the teacher to identify weaknesses, etc., etc. But the experience so far is that the emphasis is simply on getting what, you know, a notch, you know, that is accountability and not much of professional development. So we've raised that problem and practically, even if implementation is very problematic. I interacted with one second inspector, even one district manager. A second inspector who is responsible for 31 schools and is expected now to conduct, you know, 2026 let alone other people. That's voluminous, you know, books, you know, this and that and that. That is just practically important. Paul wants to do, you know, he was quite honest, unfortunately, you know, he just do this and that and that. It's just not practicable. So I've got a concern about around I2MS as an instrument which will assist teachers to identify their own weaknesses and therefore come up with a development program. In practice, that instrument has got a number of questions around it. And then lastly, I think Comrade Gum has already raised the issue of in-service training. Yesterday we got a briefing. There are still challenges around in-service training. It's an area that needs to be looked into because teachers will simply say, in fact, that's a bureaucratic routine. You just go there for the sake of paying your attendance. The person who's conducting it is questionable, etc., etc. So this area is very necessary, especially with reference to the foundation laid. We have to lay the foundation for the whole system. If you don't have proper, you know, teachers there who are properly equipped to ensure that when these teachers go back to the system, are properly equipped and they are revived, we have serious problems. So it's an area which we think need to be looked into seriously if we need to promote professional teacher development in the state. Thank you.
Uganda.
Thank you.
Chairperson, my question deals with the whole issue of supply and demand of teachers. To try and get the formulas consistently right over a period of time so that we don't have the situation of over a number of years having to provide retrenchment and early retirement packages because of an oversupply of teachers, and then in years to come finding that we now have an undersupply and that we need to top up our teachers. I think this is very, that in terms of projecting teaching as a stable career, this is something which has a very, very negative effect. And I think, it is important for us to get the supply and demand formula of teachers right. I think to an extent, you know, the question is, as we are recruiting new teachers, as we are recruiting more teachers, are we comfortable with the levels of supply and demand as it exists at the moment? I mean, is there a need for the number of teachers that we are recruiting, and you know, is this issue of an oversupply of teachers not going to overtake us again? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the support that's been. The support that seems to be given by the MECs and the HODs of the provincial departments of education. But I'm a bit concerned about, you know, the implementation of this program. This sounds to me very good, and I think this is something that we have needed a long time ago, you know, to improve the professionalism of teachers. But as usual, we will always encounter problems with the implementation process. So I just wanted to find out as to whether we have thought of, or we do have some, you know, monitoring mechanisms to ensure that this program will be implemented appropriately and will enable us to achieve our goals and objectives. Secondly, I just wanted to get a clear distinction as to what would be the role of the department and that of SAIDS in the implementation of this program. And you also estimate that it will take about 18 to 24 months
before this program is fully operational. So, what 18 months from when? Actually, what I want to know is when is it expected to be phased in for purposes of our oversight work? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On a more serious note, I'm trying to look at this improved teacher's pay and career prospects. What it means, where we're from, where it's taking us to.
I'm saying this thing, no, with hindsight, that in the 60s, 70s, 80s, the teachers, especially in disadvantaged areas, they took their misery and big pride, telling themselves that things can't be better, because the masters of the day were certainly not keen to get black properly educated. Now, in that light, I really wonder whether we are paying our teachers adequately. Money was obviously never enough in terms of the recipient or the giver. I take that on board. But given now the internal exodus of teachers, there are many teachers seated here, including me. They've left the profession. In part because of hopeless pay and limited career prospects. We adequately address that, given the fact that there's a feeling that we lose. I'm looking at the plight of teachers. I get the impression that teachers generally, they just live from hand to mouth. Is that correct for people who designate as being professional? What do we mean when you say improve teachers' pay? What exactly do we mean in career prospects? It has been alluded here by several people, including your chair, that this career path thing is not being deepened and strengthened for the brilliant teacher and the diligent teacher to walk into that type of situation. The only room for promotion seems like vertical mobility. Not much beyond that. I'd like to know these things to be better addressed. Are we really moving in the right direction? I'm saying these things because retention is a big problem. Not only internally, but also in terms of the flight of good teachers overseas and so on. Well, I'm quite happy, with obviously good strides have been made, like sales and so on, giving more flesh to what it ideally should be. Perhaps we could get more information there on how it fits into this package, further professionalizing the teacher. The second thing that keeps on concerning me, the leaky professional support that districts and second offices are providing, especially in the light of the curricular transformation. Every time I get to these seconds and district offices, it's the same complaint that we are not only understaffed, but even the spread to very key strategic areas like curricular, oversight and training and mentoring of teachers is completely inadequate. They don't say it's poor, they say it's inadequate. And indeed, the systematic evaluations that went on 2001-2004 underpinned that process. The performance of the kids in grade 3 and 4, somewhere there, 2001-2000, they show very, very low performance. Are we addressing this need? And has this curriculum been clearly aligned to higher education so that we should not just pass kids out of the school system? They should move comfortably, at least reasonably comfortably, to FET and AC Dalosia. Thank you.
You come in the next round, Baba Mbokwe now. I think this place is full.
Thank you, Chairperson. A number of these obviously are broader perhaps than particular CCS policies, so let me try and respond to a couple. And I suppose the starting point would be to Mr. Tooley and say, well, we pay teachers as much as Parliament appropriates to us for this purpose. In part, the response is there. Seriously, I think any teacher who claims that since 1994 their situation has not improved was either in a very privileged position prior to 1994, or they have not been looking at their paychecks. I think there have been a number of movements certainly since 1994 in terms of the career passing. We take the comments about perhaps needing to broaden and deepen it. Yes, if you look last year at the school grading issue, which brought about significant pay increases for school principals. If you look at the issue of the accelerated progression now, there are many, many ways, besides the ordinary cost of living and other increases driven, where teachers have, of course, been singled out for improvements. And you might have seen a statement from that poster the other day expressing concern that a teacher's starting salary of 10,000 Rand was not sufficient because then they had to buy a house for 500,000 Rand and spend 5,000 of that on a bond. Well, quite honestly, if any person starting a job can be contemplating a 500,000 Rand house straight away, I think that can't be such a bad profession, to be honest. What we do know, of course, is that Minister of Finance announced the other day an additional 6 billion Rand. He was quite careful in his choice of words. It was not necessarily all about more money for teachers. It was also, as we put it, about money for more teachers as well. So we will have to look at how that 6 billion is used. Clearly some of it will go towards improving teacher salaries, but I don't believe any teacher unions will contradict the need that we do need also more teachers, and some of this money indeed would be going for additional employment, both of teachers, but to recognise also the need for additional personnel as well. So I think we can certainly defend ourselves in terms of the pay of teachers. It's never been a career where you become a millionaire. None of us, I'm sure, started off with that understanding, and I would worry if anyone did enter the profession with that sort of understanding. It's part of the selection that is done by institutions to assess the commitment and perhaps question the reasons as to why people are coming into this profession. But certainly as a job, with job security, with all the other benefits that goes with it, I think we can certainly defend it. Finishing perhaps with the question, the issue of professional support by districts. I think we've long acknowledged that this is a matter of concern. I would have to say I think that all provincial departments are paying very serious attention to this. I mentioned earlier on the POPO department now appointing 400 additional subject advisors. They've all, I think, understood the message about the key role that districts can play in this regard, and certainly we would see that. I know that we are convening a meeting of all districts fairly soon, in the next 2 weeks or so, and perhaps we would say, Chair, if any of the portfolio committee members would like to either attend that or perhaps, given the sentiments that have been expressed, if they would like to express what they understand as some of the concerns here, I'm sure we could facilitate that as well, and it might be interesting for the district also to hear the perceptions of our public representatives in this regard. Okay, just to go back then to some of the issues, Advocate Gaum, I think, is raising the issue of the unqualified teachers. I don't think we can talk about any further time limit. We've given this time limit, and quite honestly, that time limit has expired. There is no reason for us today to have any unqualified teachers in the system, certainly not those who have been there for a long time. They've had every opportunity in the world. We have developed this National Professional Diploma in Education. We have sponsored people and funded them to attend these things, and really any teacher who wanted to upgrade over the last few years has really had every opportunity to do so. What does concern us, of course, is that last year there were some 12,000 unqualified teachers in the system. We're still getting the data for this year as to how many there are. We certainly hope they left. But our sense is that many of these teachers are not, as it were, a legacy from the old days when they perhaps did an STD or something. These, in fact, are newly appointed. And what we have directed, even as late as yesterday, was that provinces need to indicate to us what are the exact circumstances in regard to each and every unqualified teacher that's been appointed. Most of these teachers, they will tell us, have been appointed because they were unable to find a qualified teacher. And in that instance, of course, better than having no teacher in the classroom, of course, is that you get an unqualified teacher. But it concerns us that we're not sure that schools have indeed made every effort to try and attract the qualified teacher. We suspect, although clearly we don't know this, this will come out of the report, that some of this might have been, in a sense, a protection of local people, and the school doesn't make a huge effort to attract any qualified candidates. They then will tell the district, no, we couldn't find, but we know all time, so he lives across the road here, let's just get him into the school kind of thing. Now, that's not going to assist us in terms of quality education. We do have a database with at least 10,000 qualified unemployed teachers willing to go and work. We regularly get letters from both India in particular, as well as many other African countries, Zimbabwe, Zambia, of qualified teachers who are saying to us, we will teach in any school in this country. They're not bothered about rural, not rural or anything. Now, we have to put it to these schools who are perhaps appointing these unqualified teachers and say to them, look, in fact, we do have a qualified teacher we can make available to you, and in every instance, qualified teacher, whether South African or not, must be preferable to an unqualified teacher. So, Chair, perhaps we want to come back to you once we get those reports from the provinces about who these unqualified teachers are and what the basis of their appointment was, and perhaps help us there. Some of it, I have to say, Chair, links to the whole approach that we have, of course, around the appointment procedures and how those work. The Minister the other day undertook a surprise visit to schools in Delma. She arrived at the first school, I can tell you, a school that got less than 30%. She was ready to tear strips off the school principal. We walked into the school and found that, in fact, the school principal already had been moved into another school where he was now under a mentorship program of a good principal. They found another good principal. I don't think it was the case. It was literally a surprise visit. The Mpumalanga province had already put another principal in place in that school, who had already shaken up everything there. Things were obviously moving. What was fascinating, Minister always asked the question, have you got a qualified math teacher? He said, yes, I appointed one. I interviewed on Saturday and appointed one. I then said, well, I'm sure you got him from another school. He said, no, he's unemployed. Qualified math teacher in Melbourne, unemployed. I said, oh, that was very lucky. He said, no. I interviewed five qualified math teachers. Some of them were employed, but in other areas, but not teaching, and they all wanted to teach. So there is clearly a mismatch between our supply, who is out there, and how schools find these people, and that really is an issue that we have to give attention to and find perhaps a better process for managing this kind of thing. Certainly with these bursary students that come out, we are quite clear, these people will be appointed to schools, they will not have their choice of which school they go to, and certainly schools will not have a choice as to whether these people go in or not. These teachers we will regard as a national asset, and they will indeed be appointed to schools, but at the moment, as I say, this issue of the unqualified teachers, actually, unless they can really be demonstrated that you honestly could not find a qualified teacher, there really should not be any reason for any unqualified teacher in our schools as of today. Chair, some of the issues around this set, perhaps the letter will deal with and the quality issue there, but perhaps you'd want to invite the CHE to talk to you a little bit about their review of educational programs that they have been doing in the last while. You recall, of course, the one they did with the MBAs. They've done the same thing now with educational programs. There's a lot of discomfort in the sector, I can assure you. There's a recommendation that they're currently dealing with that, in fact, one institution, I'm not sure if it's the one that Mr. Mpimbu was talking to, could actually be disaccredited from offering the BS. Now, that for us would be a major concern because this is our supply chain, and if we don't have these institutions offering it, so our approach would rather be to say, what do we need to do in that institution to actually bring it up to a quality level rather than just close that institution down from offering further teacher training. But I do believe that the HQC has been very rigorous about their quality assurance processes, and we'll probably see some of the consequences of that over the next while. Mr. Tim also raises questions about the IQMS, and I think we would want to say that, of course, we do all have our own concerns about that, but one of the things we need to recognize, or two things maybe, one, of course, is that we did have the DAP system, the Development Appraisal System, which was very much what you're calling for. It was about an internal self-appraisal development approach, but the truth is, everyone will acknowledge because that system had no teeth, it had no money attached to it, in fact, it was never taken seriously. So while in an ideal world, it is correct, people, professionals should be appraising themselves and then leading themselves into their own development, the reality we saw for 5 years, that dust was on the table, you ask any teacher, did you get so-called dust? And they would say, never did it, never was it. Now you say to them, did you get IQMS? Oh, yes, if I was missed out and I didn't get a chance of getting my knowledge, I really have a problem with that. So it's unfortunate, perhaps, that the issue of money, and maybe it's the world we live in, brings a reality to this thing. But I think we have to say that the IQMS, which of course does include a self-appraisal as the first step, is the instrument to go with. And, Chair, what we do need to recognize with this, that although, as I say, we have our concerns, this is the first year of IQMS, and we understand the teaching problem. We have not had a teacher accountability mechanism in place for some 30 years in this country, since Randall Chase reflected out of the classroom in 1976. We actually haven't had this system. So the idea that after 1 year now, because there's some teaching problems after a 30-year absence, that we should then now throw this thing out, I think we've got to be very careful about that. Yes, we need to refine it, strengthen it, but in the end, we need to make it work because it's the only instrument we have, and it, at the moment, is certainly the best one we have. So we really have to try, I think, and make that one work. Chair, on the supply and demand issue, I think Randall is right. We would correct one thing. We've never retrenched, never forcibly retrenched any teacher in the system, but we accept that. I think the VSPs, we did lose a lot of talent, and the sense that now we are recovering from that, I think, is unfortunate. But I think we have been able to protect teaching as a stable career, certainly, and certainly for the future. I have no doubt. I don't think there's any danger of going back to an oversupply in this regard, because in the end, this is about producing quality teachers. And while we might not be giving bursary to the total number, I think the message that is generally coming through is that because the government is now serious about teachers and teacher ed, others, perhaps even some who might have applied for a bursary and not got it, have decided, well, I'm going to do teaching anyway. So the bursary are really only part of our bigger recruitment campaign that we would hope many are funding themselves, etc., in order to qualify as teachers. So perhaps just looking at some of those points. The implementation challenges, the DOE takes one, perhaps Lester will talk to that one. I think she has hopefully covered most of the other areas.
Thank you, Didi. One thing that came up very strongly from most of the questions was the question of quality. And of course, the reason why we go in the route that we go in is in response to precisely that. In a response to the poor quality of insect, if you like, the professional development of teachers out there. Poor quality of the programs, either programs that are run by the education system itself at the various levels, or quality programs that are run by the higher education institutions. So that's at the center, and that's what we're responding to. We're responding to it in a range of ways. We're saying, firstly, that through this partnership with SAFE, what firstly we have to do is to know who's doing what, and look at exactly what the offerings are so that there are and we move on to saying only those programs that are on the database that are accredited will then be offered to teachers. That's the first thing. Secondly, you then have to look at, we're looking at the quality assurance system that we would need to put in place to look at then what happens at the delivery point. We're looking at a range of players in looking at that. I have mentioned the importance of the role that districts would play, the role that provinces would play, and our role as a DOE. So that's what we're looking at. That's the first set of players. But you're looking at the role of the ATTC. The DG has already talked about some of the processes that they've gone through now already, looking at the current programs that are in place, and therefore whether they should be accredited or not, or if they're not, what needs to be done to actually improve the quality of programs. So this whole thing that we're looking at is precisely to respond to the issue of quality. I have said that even as we look at that, some of the programs, so we're not only engaged in planning and looking at what in the future the quality assurance measures should be. We're already engaged in processes that are looking at the current provisioning, the current courses that are running, which is why the ACCC has done what they're doing. And we in education are looking at our own players to look at how you build the capacity at district level, not only in terms of having the right numbers, which the DG has spoken to, but the quality of what is happening. One of the areas, for instance, if I were to give examples, one area that came up strongly, strong interaction with schools, was the whole area of assessment and how you ensure that assessment to make sure that teachers are looking at the things that you want to build in the system and they know how to guide teachers and schools. That has been an area that has been problematic. We have just finished, as the DOE, or we're finishing now, beginning of March, a series of workshops, which are not targeting teachers, which are targeting our own subject advisors to build their capacity, to make sure they understand the issues as we think we understand them, so there's been that process. The next step is, again, a targeted training of curriculum advisors, not just on assessments now. They've identified other needs, but I'm saying these processes will run together, so that you're not just looking at what you envisaging in the future, because there is pressure to deliver and to deliver quality and improve what's happening. That sort of answers your question, because you were saying, when are we expecting to start implementing? We have started, but we're saying to see an up and running, fully functional system, then you're looking at between 18 to 24 months, but implementation has started already. The other question, I guess, that came up very
just now, I'm now talking about the whole report before that.
So it would answer some of the questions, I guess, that were raised by various people, from Advocate down to Mr. Ntembu. There was a question also that came from Advocate Gum about the point system. If we introduce the point system, if teachers don't go in for that professional development, what do we do? And they don't accumulate the points that you're looking at. This is one of the areas that we're working on very closely with Trace. Certainly, our own original point of view was that you give them, especially that these points, instead of being used punitively, we were looking at them being used so that they provide an incentive for people to do what they're doing. They will be recognized in promotion posts. So if you haven't accumulated those points, you would not be able to get promoted. So that's the one area. But we were suggesting in the policy that we would give them two cycles. And if in a 2-3 year cycle period they haven't accumulated the desired points, then we're saying FACE as the professional body should deal with it. We're not saying we're saying FACE must tell us how this should be done, because all of us are on the same side. We all want improved quality in the teaching profession, and we believe that unless teachers keep themselves up to date, we cannot begin to work towards that idea. The issue of supply and demand, indeed, the DG has addressed, but also just to signal that in the policy framework and in the work that's happening now, the question of keeping a clear database and improving the information that we're getting from provinces on, firstly, the people who are leading the system and the people who are entering the system and what the needs are, that's an area that we're working on that has been strengthened. Because even for, as you were saying, we don't want to find that we've got an oversupply, although we don't think that is a problem, but as the supply in the areas of real need, that's what for us is very important, and therefore the database is one area that we're looking at strengthening. And already, even for next year's bursaries, we need real, credible data from the provinces for us to be able to train in the area that we need to train in. the role of DOE versus SAFE. SAFE is the professional body, and we want to recognize that, and we don't want to have a body that's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. We as the DOE, in the area of continuing professional development, believe that we should support SAFE to do what they are supposed to do financially, and where they need us in terms of sitting with them in some of the committees and doing the work, and of course we will do our quality assurance role in collaboration with them and as advised by the professional body. I'm not too sure that anything else that I have left out, you have covered most of the issues, but if there's an area that I've left out, I'm quite happy to come in again. The monitoring mechanisms that have been put in place, again, we have a range of players in the system. Is it monitoring mechanism of the is it monitoring mechanism of the implementation to start with? We have different forums that we, as we are doing here, we report to CM and to HEDCOP regularly. We have established we have the Teacher Education Coordinating Committee that is the link between COVID and ourselves. But I think I'm getting myself into a trick. I'm trying to recall, because if you're looking at implementation, I think the question actually arose because you were concerned about the role of provinces. You were concerned about the role of provinces, and indeed, like I'm saying, we have the Teacher Education Committee, which is a coordinating body, and they play their monitoring role, but CM and HEDCOM play an oversight role in terms of the monitoring. We are hoping, because if you look at the IPAD program, we have, as I was saying yesterday, signed an implementation protocol. That protocol clearly says, province, you will be responsible for doing A, B, C, and D. National, you are probably responsible for doing this. And that's what we all signed, and that's what we're going to be holding one another accountable for. And that's part of the monitoring.
We should share that protocol with the committee. I think it would be useful for them to have access to it. But perhaps just a final comment here on the quality one. I don't think we should underestimate the absolutely critical role of SAFE over the next while. SAFE, up until now, has, in a sense, really struggled to understand and play what they call the third pillar, the professional development pillar. They register teachers, they implement the code of conduct, and they've done that quite well. They really struggled to find their role here. And essentially what we'll be saying now is, despite the other quality assurance processes, CAG, etc., in the end, it will be the job of SAFE as a professional body to determine the value of each and every program and allocating points to it. Does this course get 1 point, 2 points, 3 points? That becomes the real contestation, and ultimately this will be guided by the certain teachers. Teachers who do a course and find that it has no relevance to their classroom practice, they will go to place and say, that course, no point, finish, gone. They'll go to another one and they'll say, this is really jolly good, it helped me in my course, helped me in my teaching on a daily basis, let's give that thing 3 points, 4 points, whatever it might be. So place becomes the real point, not of quality, which is in fact a different measure, but of value to the teacher. What is the value of this course, and what is the value we then attach to it? So, as I say, I think we've really carved out our role for SAFE that is propelling them up to a very central position in regard to the whole professional development. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I just want to make a follow-up. Perhaps I did not make my point very clear. I2MS, Integrated Quality Management System, integrated, an instrument which HEDCOP to want to serve two objectives, accountability and professional development. Now, what I'm saying, I'm not saying that we must throw out the system. I'm trying to point out some shortcomings. What I'm saying is that an instrument meet a criteria that are generalizable, that are architectural, that are so-called objective, because now everybody must abide by it, especially for paying progression, because legal action can be taken. You see, those are the requirements. But the instrument that is intended to make for professional development, they need to be more subjective, to be more context specific. Now, if you have got one instrument that purpose, to achieve, two objectives that require instruments that are contradictory, more often than not, what is happening, you find that now this instrument will simply only serve purposes of accountability. All what we are saying is accountability is very important, but we need to be careful. Let's have an instrument for accountability, and we must have an instrument for professional development, because the two need particular form and instrument and what you call. That's all that we're saying. Like in the past, we have got claiming that the former did, claiming that now it's for professional development, whereas it's simple accountability. So here is simple accountability. And what is even worse, it leads to what I can call strategic compliance, where you pretend that now actually you are doing the thing, because the principal or whoever is doing it still does good things. But what they're doing is the same thing. It's simple strategic compliance, because you get what? A notch. So all what was happening is that these things are integrated, trying to compromise professional and so on from each other and so on. We think that more work still needs to be done. We know it's a complex issue, historical and so on. We're simply pointing out weaknesses of this is a fact. All what is doing now is for progression, but not for professional development. So we're saying accountability is important, professional development is important, but how do you conceptualize it and which instruments to appropriate, that is the issue.
Maybe just to start off by saying I can't agree more with what my colleague has indicated now. We visited schools. We visited a number of schools, and what we asked the teachers immediately, what we asked the management and so on of the schools that we spoke to, was there anyone at the school who did not get the 1% notch? And immediately they said, no, not at all, everyone's got it. So that is the problem of the self-assessment, self-appraisal part of the system. And the fact is that the development part and the accountability coin, those two are basically in a sense in conflict with each other. Now we are pains to, you are at pains to tell us today that no, don't be afraid, there will be no punitive element, point system, no punitive action at all. Now I understand that, and I understand that one must be sensitive in that regard, but the question is really, hasn't the point come now in our history and in our system's history that we must not be so careful anymore to say that, yes, they may also be punitive measures, as they are in every other profession that I know of. In some other way, they are also matters that can be regarded, you can describe as accountability, whatever the case may be, or you can say as a punitive element to it, and so on. So, I don't know whether we must be so very careful, to steer away from that, but maybe that is because we are mixing the accountability and the development issues with each other, as colleague Ben has indicated. Then only to say, Chair, that I think that the department, I just want us actually to perhaps make a note of it, they have indicated that the provinces must indicate why, there are still 12,000 unqualified teachers, and they will report back to us on that matter. Maybe we must just make some kind of a note that report back in terms of our oversight role, actually, takes place at a certain future date. And then I would just also like to hear what the department doing, and also the indicating what SACE's role will be.
be with regard to the question of the quality of these training programs. Maybe I'm just alerting us to perhaps also make a note to call back the department and say at some point in future to give an indication to us, you know, exactly what has been done in this regard. Because clearly on the ground, many teachers are complaining very, very loudly about you know, the quality of these programs. Thank you.
I don't know whether what this world is, not about idols. You know, we would put them aside before we go about them. But you want to come in?
In fact, my point also revolved around the unpacking of the IQMS. I hope that will respond to it like the However, it is. May I know, is there any induction practice in the department, right from school level and even at district level, when these people are appointed, or are just appointed and left to swim or sink, without actually indicating what is expected of them? Because to me, there is a whole lot of difference between theory and the actual practice that are being intended when they are still in training. But once they get into the situation, particularly those in school, will have to come to know what is actually happening in the coaching in the education situation. And the other question relates to these deserts that we have referred to, that we are so welcome. Do they also cover teachers who work to involve themselves with ECD, early childhood development? And if so, they could also come to say, with the figures given here, so many deserts, perhaps when the department comes virtually, they could indicate eventually, once they're through, how many teachers have enrolled for this course, foundation, say, this and that at the end of the day. That is also very, very interesting. And finally, there's a question of defaulters. That's why we need to qualify defaulters. Some people may default by dropping out. Then they've got to pay their positions. But some may, in one way, default by not making the grade in a particular year. What's going to happen is, when the whole thing still progress on, the desire will be withheld for the particular year, so that when he or she does pass the following year, he continues. But in the meantime, where will he get passed? Let's look at the
particular. Thank you, Chairperson. Your interaction with the Deans of Education Forum, this needs to be appreciated. And you must be immediately encouraged to strengthen this, you know, linkage that you have with this forum. I wish that could be done. What are the positives, you know, as far as we are concerned, of this kind of interest? I'm relating this to, I wish to allude to what Honorable Kim was very concerned. And as you interact with him privately outside the question, please do you know, inform this forum about this you know, irregularity. I think it is really a disgrace if what he's telling about is true, you know. This forum, I don't know what nature, you know, your interaction, what form is the interaction with individual teams or as a forum, you have within your ranks a committee that interacts with them. I don't know what form it takes. I must just really plead that you pick up, you know, issues such as this. Because it really is very, very disturbing that such things can still be happening now when we are so passionate about quality. And then secondly, I also must indicate how encouraging it is to learn that through the Rushaga, treasury holders are guaranteed employment. Full stop. And that is very happy about it.
Well, carrying the equivalent to the independence of the chief qualifier, yeah?
I don't know qualifier.
If we find them
no risk, you know, in terms, you mentioned school-based activities in terms of training. Whether there is no risk, you know, compromising quality, the quality of training, and whether good standards are not at risk. But if such a risk does exist, how do you plan to avoid it? I think you did, in a way, you did, you know, give answer to them to this concern as you were responding, but perhaps you could specifically, you know, answer this. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I abuse my can add another tool to materialize? Yeah, it is about this employment of teachers. Remember, we passed the DGS, which was meant specifically for the new recruits and teachers that have been out of the system for 2 years. My question is whether this is being implemented on the ground. Because these provinces have these portfolios of all these teachers, so that at least the schools on the ground do know. If they have this program, they can just have one. The second one, it relates again to that career pattern. Why we cannot box it into the school? How I wish there could be a way of keeping, once you have a subject advisor and an employer side, it means you have a certain esteem of consultancy. But you are now those subject advisors to not outside even the curriculum and become eating over. Surely if we need to reconsider so that they can rise in that curriculum as far as children are concerned, because this is where we are losing. If we need to go to legislation and do something, at least keep them moving around schools, assisting teachers, doing the subjects that they like. The last one is not a matter of rising now. More of a general one. It has to do with the misconception that once you do your major, you can do your PPT, you can do your own. If you have a teacher to go and teach on Mkushwana how to jump and what to do, chances are that teacher will feel uncomfortable. He is over. Learner cannot go there. In this new system, are we still able to turn out these real teachers who are now not kids and able to play, not talk about this big camp for the left university? This is the last question. On quality again. This rises from our workshop yesterday. It rises from the concern about Madhus. Madhus says, they have this power to monitor and evaluate and assess and quantity. But when it comes to our provinces, our public sector, they are not allowed in there. They do this only in the private schools. So they feel almost disempowered. I would appreciate a comment on that. Now that Congress in Chamber is coming in, that's a general comment from us now. If we have issues like the one that Congress in Chamber was raised about this poor institution, I think let us keep our lines open so that we don't wait for meetings of this nature. So that we just, once you pick up something like that, right there in your constituency, pick up the phone, talk to the GP, so that this thing can be solidarity, come off that speaker. I'm not saying that as a general advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me try again. But I think I do appreciate your final comment. Certainly, we would hope that those kind of issues are indeed brought to our attention as soon as possible. It is worrying, in a sense, when in a public forum like that, something is raised and we don't identify the institution, and probably each one of us is thinking, is it that one, is it that one? And in a way, the whole sector then gets tarred perhaps as being inadequate, and we need to find a way perhaps to manage that, but certainly we will speak to the devil afterwards and just see if there's something there that we can pick up on. Chair, starting with the issue of IQMS and this dual role that it plays. That historically was, of course, a long discussion we went through. DUNS, as I say, was set up as purely a developmental instrument. It had no accountability, etc. And as I say, I think it failed dismally in its purposes. Clearly now, as you say, we have an accountability measure there. Whether it contains that development, perhaps is subject to debate. But just two little points perhaps. One is, of course, that this integrated approach of both development and accountability was proposed by the unions themselves. So this is something that has actually come from them and saying, we think these two systems should be integrated. And to be honest, I have to say, to imagine that we could, you know, have implemented IQMS on its own, to now suggest a second instrument that does something else, which also involves, you know, teachers being assessed, etc., read would be very complex. And I think we have to recognize, Chair, that in the public service, as a whole, we have accepted what we call the PMDS. It's a performance management and development system. It incorporates both the development side and the management, the accountability side, and I'm not sure, Chair, whether we really can, at this stage, think about now putting that IQMS apart and running it as two separate processes, one for development, one for accountability. We can take it back, we can take it as a comment, but I think we should recognize the complexity. I think Advocate Garm's point is to recognize that IQMS is now not just self-appraisal. It starts there, as I say, but certainly there is a provision for both the school management team to do the verification of that self-appraisal, and then there's a requirement that the district look at the school appraisal overall, and certainly if there was a school that continually, you know, referred 100% IQMS okay figures, and yet we saw that they were really failing very seriously, at both whether it's primary or secondary, the district must be expected there to say, hold on, there's a mismatch here, let's look at this thing. But overall, you would have heard, I think, the Minister has stressed the need for external verification. She has spoken about our intention to establish an evaluation unit, which really would be able to then look in particular at those schools where we saw, hold on, there's a problem, there's a mismatch here, and send the team to do that kind of external verification to make sure that the accountability is indeed an honest accountability. We recognize that. Perhaps also just on Advocate Garm's one, I don't think Mr. Chubeka was saying there won't be punitive measures. It was saying we have given that over to the profession in the interest of protecting its own status and esteem to decide on the nature of the measures that should be taken. It might well be that they decide on punitive measures. It may well be that they decide to deregister these teachers. The point she was making, it's not our decision as a department, it's the decision of the profession to decide on these measures. And as I say, I don't think they will be too generous for some of these teachers who, in after 6 years, have not achieved even the minimum benchmark of development. One really has to question as a professional whether you want them to be part of your own profession. So I think that is understood. The report back on the unqualified teachers, certainly we will provide that as soon as that information comes through. Chair, finally, perhaps to some of your questions, issue of that piece of legislation, yes, it is certainly being used by provinces, but of course the reality is at the moment the provinces are not investing a lot in the training and development of teachers, so the one criteria that you could place these people who you've invested in fact they have not invested in many, so there has not been much use of that. There is a limited use, I understand, of the first time appointment, but to a large extent, Chair, that was a backstop measure. Certainly where a school governing body exercises its responsibilities properly, makes a proper recommendation to the province, I don't believe there's any need for us to intervene and upset that one. Chair, we note your comments around career passing and taking it beyond the institution. I think I can only agree to take that back and look at it and see to what extent that would be possible. I think it's a valued suggestion. The issue of subject specialisation is, of course, still a problem, and that's where the Minister has signalled her wish to re-look at the whole post-provisioning model. At the moment, essentially, we provide teachers to schools on what we call a basket of posts approach. So if you've got 300 learners, you're entitled to have 10 teachers, we simply say to the school, you have a basket of posts, 10 teachers, off you go and you decide how to fill these. The Minister, and rightly so, said, look, we have now a national curriculum. Everyone from grade R to 9 is offering exactly the same subject, same amount of time, etc. There must be a much more specific way that we can now say, for example, every primary school must have a math teacher because everyone is doing math. Must have these teachers, and we've got the subjects, obviously, for the different phases. We should be a lot more specific. And clearly now, at the secondary level, with the new national curriculum statement, we know that every learner is doing either math or math literacy. So every school, for every 30 learners at that school, you need either one math or math literacy teacher. So we are doing a rethink now of that post-provisioning approach and whether it will just be a general basket of posts that schools will get or whether they'll be now saying, you've got 60 learners in grade 12, that means two classes of math, you need two math teachers, and you need this and that and that, and these in fact are the posts that you're getting. I think we will be a lot more specific about that one. Chair, finally on the issue of quality and the role of Umaluti, I think it's very wrong for Umaluti to in any way say that they are not allowed in the public sector. That's a complete misinterpretation. You go back to the Umaluti Act, the General and Further Education Quality Assurance Council Act. It's quite clear that they work also in the public sector. They quality assure the work of the providers in the public sector, which are, of course, the provinces. The only limitation, of course, Chair, is that Umaluti, where it can, in fact, close down an independent institution that is not providing educational quality, we have restricted them. They are not allowed to close down a provincial department of education. Their task is, if there is a problem with the quality of provision in the public sector, they are required by law to bring that to the attention of the provincial department. The provincial department is required to take steps to correct those particular issues, and those must be followed up, so they have all the power there, except, as I say, for the final power, I think you would understand we cannot allow Umaluti to close down the provincial department of education because it's not to be of sufficient quality. So I think Umaluti ready to check on its mandate, and certainly if that's the way it would be presented, it's incorrect. Can I have to Ms. Fraser?
Thank you. Maybe I should start with the question of the bursary. Firstly, there was a question around whether the bursaries we are offering to ECD teachers as well. Indeed, and we must remember that ECD is part of the foundation state, that it is an area that's been lifted and prioritized, and therefore, yes, we are offering bursaries to ECD teachers. I want to link it to a question that Prof asked about whether in the route that we're now following, which means those ECD teachers also now go to university for training, same as all the other teachers, whether in fact we still produce teachers who are able to operate at that level. All the courses are specialized. They are not just about academic science important. They target the teacher that we are training. And therefore, if we are training ECD teachers, we will train them in line with what the expectation of what they have to do when they go out to teach. so that there isn't a problem with that going wrong. But let me take the issue of the bursaries a little bit further, because I think it is important to underline exactly, for all of us to understand what we're trying to do with these bursaries. I did say, and maybe I didn't emphasize it sufficiently, that these bursaries are not necessarily poverty linked. They is not your NFR, so we are not targeting the poor necessarily. If the poor fall within the, you know, the priority, if they're going to teach in the areas that we want and in the schools that we are looking at providing with teachers, they qualify. Because you must remember that NSFAS is our vehicle to target the poor. And therefore the question about if we withdraw the bursary, where will they find the money, doesn't arise in this case, because they can still go to NSFAS if it is about not having funds. But this is attracting the best minds into the profession. We're saying more teachers, better teachers, and this is what we're trying to do with this particular funding. What then happens if, I mean, there was a question about unpacking the defaulting. Indeed, the defaulting could be linked to either the bursar deciding at the end of the training, after they use the money, our money, that they don't want to go and teach, in which case we would then expect them to pay us back. If we do make an allowance, however, in line with what NSFAS does with their own funding right now, we do allow for somebody not to complete within the set time, every giving them one extra year. And in that case, we still pay for them, because we're hoping that we would have got the best teachers anyway, and therefore it will not be a matter of failing completely money, but we don't want to be completely unrealistic. And to say lastly that, again linked to the bursaries, the point that Ntate Mohlala is making, that they are guaranteed jobs, but we do recognize that it may not be possible for us to find them the jobs immediately upon completion. And we're saying if we are not able to place them within a 6-month period, then we release them from the obligation. They can go and find other work, and they don't have to pay us back anything. We have to find them to make sure they are employed within 6 months at least of completion of their course. There was a question or a comment again from Ntate Mohlala around, we have moved from the bursaries, around the Dean's Forum. Indeed, that's a forum that we have appreciated working with. We strengthened our own working relations with them, and we are now invited to their meetings when necessary, but we also set a special discussion meeting with them, and this forum meets regularly. At a national level, we're able to discuss a whole range of issues, and the issue of quality of some of the courses has been tabled, and because we have honest discussions with them, they have tabled some of the things that are unhappy with on our part, which we are all jointly addressing. At operational level, they're trying to strengthen relationships with the provincial departments of education, but at this strategic level, it really is a national forum, you know, of engagement. The question of quality of school-based inserts, I think there are two things here. Firstly, to recognize that indeed we will need to monitor what's happening at school level, but also to recognize, in line with a point that was made already, that we've got exceptional teachers who are already in the schooling system, and it would be criminal to actually not use the capacity that exists in the schools. And where possible, to use that capacity not only for the development of teachers in their own schools, but to use those teachers in clusters of schools around them. We must look at how to make better use of our teachers. What we are looking at increasingly as a department is not to take away, to devalue either the teachers in the system or the schools themselves, because we think in a lot of ways in our approaches sometimes we take away from schools and therefore do not enable them to play their role in actually improving the quality of what's happening in the system. The last question perhaps, DG, that was raised was around induction of new teachers into the system. area is actually looking at and looking at strengthening. But in practice, there are provinces already that run induction programs for their, for new teachers. But maybe to accept that, maybe it's an area that we really need to look at much more closely, but it must not be divorced from what we're doing already of strengthening the quality of initial preparation of teachers. So you don't always see teachers as coming out almost deficient. I mean, they need, yes, for some orientation, but you don't want to say they have come out not ready to teach, because this is what we're trying to deal with. Teachers must come out ready to teach because of the quality of training that they receive.
On the issue of the induction of teachers, I just want to get the view of the department firstly I want to find out as to whether this is done independently of the induction that is done by some and then I just want to find out their view as to would they consider having that induction being done by some teachers.
That does what the former speaker was saying. It's not limited to individual schools. It's a general pattern. You see it everywhere. Whether it's Gauteng and so on, the pattern is there. And what causes this improbability is this element of peer evaluation. When I go to be evaluated, obviously I'm going to choose a friend of mine to evaluate me.
and vice versa. And that has got a tendency of inflating the point. Secondly, there is an element of no, being popular, no. That element, secondly, is built in, you know, in that system. Who must be left out? If we can't lift up the leave out anybody, that all gets into the deep. That is one of the intrinsic elements in the system that makes it very vulnerable to abuse. I wouldn't say the big abuse, but it is an element of abuse. In a pool of about 40 teachers, it's difficult, you know, unless it is a well-oiled school, all to pull in one direction. So these are the elements to build in, you know, in the very system that makes it vulnerable.
My content, Mbunja.
I didn't have much time to exercise my chairmanship. my question says it's also a follow up.
Mbunja, I speak.
I must assure the deputy that I don't think by intervening there will be anything that they will be taken away from schools, especially in rural schools. They absolutely know what to put it, the necessary expertise and knowledge to implement all these good, well-intentioned policies. And please intervene and let the department run the education instead of the union, because as I pointed out last time around, in one school where the principal wanted to, it links up to what the DG has said already, where one principal wanted to have a qualified teacher employed at her school, there was a temporary unqualified teacher. But now she could not do it because of the pressure and the fear from the union. So let the department run education. I would prefer it that way. Because again, what is happening outside there? Recently, there's a crop of inspectors who have been employed. But who are those? Most are from principals who have been failures, who have failed as principals in their school. But there is this political or peer pressure to have those employed. And it's in fact it's doing a damn to what is otherwise well intentioned policies of the department. Because nationally, we're doing very well. But down there, something else is happening. Unintended consequences. But my question, the minister has announced what the GT has said to the external. I would love to have more detail because the parties would love to comment on what the minister is announcing. I looked at my internet this morning last week. We'd love to have more details because it's especially at the developmental inspectorate. That's you don't know what that means.
Thank you. I'll ask the job to be at 11 so that I don't have to have the members here. So I think I'll allow the three people to respond and then we close.
Thank you, Chair. On the long run, we certainly will provide Mbunjani what he needs, but can I also indicate that probably the legislation which we'll be bringing forward to this committee later this year, in fact, the establishment of the needs unit would be part of that. We would want to see it as a statutory body. Chair, perhaps just a quick comment on the fact that IQMS and Valenta might finish with some of the induction that perhaps the ACE and school leadership can be mentioned. Perhaps, look, we recognize everything has been said about this 100% schools and that sort of thing, although we should recognize that overall, in fact, the figures were that some 90% of learners, of teachers across the country, in fact, got their rating on the IQMS, and some 10% did not. So to say that it's universally 100% is not quite right, but it doesn't take away the point. Chair, what we must have to clarify is that this 1% is not intended to reward good performance. So you use that word, all right? It's in fact intended to reward satisfactory performance. It's not a performance reward. It's in fact just a notch, which in fact in the rest of the public service has been automatic for many years. If you're a public servant and you work every year, if, as long as you keep your job, you get another percent, another percent. We raise the bar slightly in respect of teachers to say that you need to demonstrate the satisfactory performance, but in fact that's all that's required. And therefore in that context, Chair, I think it's fair to expect that 90% of our teachers probably are performing satisfactorily. There's probably 10% that aren't, and clearly they haven't got their 1%, but overall that's the sort of figure that we should be expecting on this IQMS as it currently stands. I agree there certainly are issues about the willingness of both school managers and district managers, their willingness to exercise that authority, and that's precisely why we bring the lead unit in to say if the moderation is showing you clearly have not exercised that authority, we will then bring in that inspectorate, so-called, and make sure it happens. But the point is that we are proposing to the union a separate instrument to recognize exceptionally good work, the good performance, as it were. We've proposed to the union the basic framework that says some 10% of the teachers, perhaps with the really good performers, we need to put them up there and give them a particular reward. We've proposed another layer of some 20% of teachers who are probably quite good, but not at the top level, who will also get some sort of cash-type reward. But that is a very separate thing from the current IQMS, which is just about essentially ensuring that you are doing your job. And I think, as I say, it's fair to assume that some 90% are, in fact, doing their job, and it's the 10% in a way that we've pulled out. So just to separate, as I say, the IQMS from a performance reward system, which is still under negotiation with you. For the rest, as I say, I think the comments from Mr. Puchani about our willingness to run education, I think the Minister has signaled her willingness indeed to do so, and perhaps the situation could then close.
Thank you very much. Just to share something that is linked perhaps to the question on induction that you asked, to share with the committee that we have just developed and will be field testing an ACE in school leadership. And this is meant for as an entry level qualification for principals. And it's in line with what we're driving towards the quality in the schools to ensure that any future principals are appointed only, they qualify for appointment only if they have this qualification. We've designed the standards around it, and together with higher education institutions and practicing principals, look at elements that should be part of this course. We are still testing it, starting in May, through five higher education institutions. And again, linking to all the things that we were saying earlier, we have chosen certain higher education institutions on the basis of what they are able to offer, on the basis of the capacity in the institution to offer, and with the others we're working to ensure that they can develop that capacity and ensure us of their ability to deliver this course by the beginning of next year. So we're not allowing just everybody to do it. There was a question earlier about ensuring that coming back to this committee with the numbers and the fields of study of the people that we've offered bursaries to, just to reassure this committee that the work that we're doing already, but because these had not been finalized, we could not come with those figures. By end of April, we will be having the figures, and we will be able to tell you who is where. But Chairperson, maybe I just conclude with an appeal to this on Sunday. On Sunday right now, in my understanding, is that it works with the public service at a higher level rather than with teachers per se. So it's not something that we're contemplating at the moment. But finally, perhaps here to us with committee, we have talked in all of that we've been saying, we've talked about our major teacher recruitment campaign, and we're hoping that you can be part of the process with us. Secondly, we've told you the messages that we're hoping to put out there in the public. We're hoping to use ambassadors, real teachers on the ground, who are exceptional teachers. So as you do your constituency work and in your visits, if you come across these outstanding teachers that we should be trying to profile, that we can use as ambassadors for the profession, please let us know, because those are the people we would want to use. And also, we will be, if you've got things to say that are positive about the profession, please send in those articles to the papers, because we are hoping to put it on the national agenda so that everybody talks about the teaching profession as a profession that we're entering.
Which category of
you must be admitted into higher institutions we give you when you are there. So the criteria for admission are from the ATI in terms of admission for study at the university. So if they take the senior certificate and you've got a quality pass, it's up to them. We'll give you the better when you've been admitted, when you're admitted already.
Thank you so much. Nothing about that.